Greetings. I'm Austin Egbert, the director for Mind Matters News. Welcome to another BingeCast, where multiple episodes are fused into a single program. Today, we talk with Jeremiah Marks, CFO and Vice President of Opera Philadelphia, about the use of business intelligence and AI in corporate finance. Enjoy.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. If you have purchased something on Amazon.com like a left-handed squeegee, you find out that the next day that you have all sorts of solicitations to buy left-handed squeegees. That's an example, a simple example of business intelligence. Another thing that happens is every time you go to buy airline tickets, the prices change. If you go to buy tickets to the Dallas Cowboys, those prices change. Even if you take Uber, found out that Uber has these surge prices, which are based on supply and demand. And if you try to use an Uber when there's a big demand, you're going to be paying more. So Mind Matters is interested in how this technology affects us. And this technology that we're talking about today is business intelligence. Business intelligence is so common that it's even made its way into an entry in Wikipedia if you want to read more about it. Our guest today is Jeremiah Marks. Jeremiah has a CPA and has earned his MBA from the University of Washington in Seattle. He is currently the CFO and Vice President of Opera Philadelphia. And according to the New York Times, Opera Philadelphia is one of the most creative and ambitious companies in this country. So we're talking to somebody in the know who uses business intelligence, and that's where we want to go, to the practitioners and above it. So, Jeremiah, welcome.
Thank you.
First of all, tell me quickly about Opera Philadelphia.
Yeah, so Opera Philadelphia is around a $15 to $16 million organization that focuses now on a festival. And our focus with the festival is where you can see and touch the future of opera. We've just transformed recently into this new business model with our festival last year called 017. And 018 opens at the end of September. And I encourage anybody who's in Philadelphia to come out and see it. It's going to be pretty amazing.
Are your operas in English? Are they most of them in foreign languages? Or yeah. There's a mix?
So it's a mix. I mean, it really depends on the opera that's being performed. We don't specifically choose an opera just because of the language. But with most of the modern opera, that we do, if not all of them in recent memory, are in English. But some of the other operas, such as Lucia di Lammermoor that we are doing this September, will be in Italian.
Well, one of the things that I did, you invited me to go to The Barber of Seville. One of the things about the non-English operas is that they offer subtitles above so you can read them. And it was one of the most hilarious sitcoms that I've ever seen in my life. It just cracked me up. So give opera a chance. It's pretty cool stuff. Now, as the CFO of Opera Philadelphia, you use business intelligence. Educate me. What is business intelligence?
Yeah, so the current form of business intelligence that we use is really being able to use a platform that sits on top of all of our databases. So our accounting database, our CRM database that tracks donations.
And CRM, what does that mean?
Customer Relationship Management Database.
Okay.
So it tracks customers. And we also have our phone call database that we're working on to sit on top of as well. But basically, it amalgamates the different databases, and it develops data insights that you can't really see if you're just looking at reporting on with one database versus another.
Can you do stuff with business intelligence today that you couldn't do a few years ago without the software?
Actually, no. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could do quite a few years ago that you can do today. But what's the big difference is that it's push the technology and push the user to the front line. So what we had to rely on data scientists for, we can now basically utilize at the front line with our director of marketing or VP of development. And so we're not having to rely on these individuals that have specific knowledge in data science to basically develop this information. And so what it does is it actually brings better insights into the data that we're using, because the end users are developing and creating their reports rather than an IT person or a data scientist person that is looking at it from, you know, their perspective.
And you don't actually write all this business intelligent software. This is commercially available. What are some of the packages that organizations and the C-suite and some of the professional organizations use, some of the commercially available stuff?
Right. So some of the household names are Power BI by Microsoft, Qlik or QlikSense. I know a lot of people have probably heard of Tableau. There's a new one out there also called SciSense that is a really powerful tool. And so there's a number of tools out there that do this. We at Upper Philadelphia use Power BI because that's the capabilities that we have in-house, and we utilize it throughout the organization. So almost everybody in the organization that needs to view data actually views their data through Power BI.
I see. I have read that a powerful component of business intelligence is the fusion of data from external data sources into a company's specific profile, into their own specific data. We have lost our privacy to large databases. I have the world at my fingertips and I can look up all of the information available in the world, but I paid a price for that. I've lost my privacy totally. What are some of these, some examples of some of these large databases business intelligence has access to that they're using in conjunction with their local databases?
Well, there's a number of private and public databases that are out there that you can tap into using business intelligence. I'm going to just speak to the ones that we at Opera Philadelphia use. So I'll give you an example. In our community initiatives group, or what we call it, our education group, we tap into the database for the Philadelphia School District so that we can find out the demographics of the schools that attend our operas. And so we can overlay the attendance from those schools with the demographics that are coming from those schools.
Wow.
So we know who is actually coming from a demographic perspective to our operas. We also utilize other one is Wealth Engine or wealth ranking databases, where we can basically take individuals, put them through the Wealth Engine database and understand what we call a wealth rank and whether we should, you know, further our conversations with these individuals and how to further our conversations with them.
Now, each of these has a price tag, is that correct?
Some do, some don't. Wealth Engine does, but the Philadelphia School District doesn't. You also can tap into a lot of information through Wikipedia, Google Analytics, and we also tap into information through Facebook as well. And we overlay this information with attendance, with giving, with ticket purchases, and then that just gives us better insight into the individuals that are coming to the organization. The other thing that we do is we actually do surveys, so that gives us other information with the individuals who come and attend our operas.
So you overlay all of these databases to get kind of a multi-dimensional perspective of your potential clients.
And current clients.
And current clients.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the things that I kind of liked, it's a small thing, but I thought it was really interesting, is the way that multi-dimensional data can be reduced to a pictorial representation of data. Is that something which you use very much?
Yes, all the time. I mean, a lot of the information that we use includes like flow diagrams. We use a lot of chord charts, Sankey diagrams to show movement from one year to another.
Okay, you use some big words there. Chord charts?
Yeah, chord charts.
Chord.
Yes, it shows movement from one section to another section. Like if they are giving at a certain level, then they're giving at another level. And what we can then do is understand why.
And that gives you immediate access through your visual interpretation of what's going on.
Absolutely.
I think that is really, really cool. And what was the other type of chart that you mentioned?
It's called a Sankey diagram. And it does something very similar.
It says something similar.
Yeah.
The cool thing about these things, as I have seen them, is that you can actually look at multi-dimensions and you can represent them using colors, sizes, font sizes, and all sorts of different representations. So you can actually see multi-dimensional things things happening on one little picture. That really is cool.
Absolutely. And also you can look at time too, which is a very powerful way to look at some of this information.
Okay. Now, the CEO, the COO, the CFO are sometimes referred to as the C-suite of an organization. How does business intelligence help the C-suite to be creative?
Well, I think it helps helps the C-suite understand the organization more fully and understand the drivers for the organization. I think a lot of times the C-suite really doesn't understand the real true drivers of why individuals are acting the way they are. And so what data has done for us is help us understand our audience and understand our constituents a lot better, and which leads to more informed programming models, and as well as ticketing and development models, including pricing.
Here is one question. Do you think that business intelligence itself is creative or just a tool in creativity?
Oh, I think it's just a tool in creativity. I don't think it's creative in any way, because you are the one that's going to be putting the creativity together when you're developing your reports. And what the business intelligence does is it just brings to light the issues in the data that you should be paying attention to if you set it up correctly.
Interesting. So how does business intelligence affect the consumer? How does it affect me?
Well, I talked about this a little bit earlier, including, you know, what we do with Wealth Engine or Facebook or, you know, even demographics. But, you know, from a long-term perspective, you know, we're going to be look at ticket prices and dynamic pricing.
Now, dynamic pricing, that's a cool word. Dynamic means ever-changing. So you look at the supply, demand, and you adjust
the velocity of the ticket being sold, you know,
the velocity of the ticket.
Yeah, so how fast are we... are we selling these tickets, the volume that we have left on hand? And basically we adjust the tickets, in order to take advantage of what we're seeing in the marketplace. And so it's basically ends up being a supply demand issue.
Interesting. Do you think this is a big thing about AI? Everybody says that AI is going to take over a bunch of jobs and increase the length of unemployment lines. Do you see business intelligence affecting any of the members of corporate America, specific Opera Philadelphia, and, for example, the C-suite?
So I think AI is just a component of business intelligence. I think too many times we equate artificial intelligence with business intelligence. And in my mind, that is not the case. AI is a component. And for the most part, you know, everybody talks about it, but I don't think it to really get there, it takes a lot of work. And to understand where it's going to be
It takes a lot of work for the writing of the software, but also to interpret what that software does to your data.
Yeah.
That's what takes a lot
of
work.
So one of the problems is that AI is not auditable. So which means that...
not auditable.
Yeah. So if a number comes out, how do you make sure that's the right number? How do you know where that number came from, right? Because for the most part, if you have a number that pops out, you can trace that back through and trace the information through an algorithm back to its source data. But with AI, you're unable to do that. And so, you know, one of the concerns is, or one of the places that we'd be using it would be in dynamic pricing. And so if you don't really understand the business, and you don't understand the AI that's driving your pricing, you could get some pretty odd numbers, or numbers that could actually hurt your business.
Interesting. Yeah, and AI, they refer to that ability to identify the cause of an output as an explanation facility. And I guess the software and the AI that you use doesn't have this explanation facility that allows you to do that.
No.
So therefore, even...
Well, I would just like to clarify, we're not there yet on the AI side.
Okay, not there yet.
No.
So as the CFO, you use this result and you get the output, but you still have to take responsibility for the output, using the output from your own judgment.
Absolutely.
Wow, that is fascinating. The double entry bookkeeping method revolutionized accounting 500 years ago. In the old days, little men hunched at desks with green visors spent their time adding up columns of numbers 8 or more hours a day. Along came Lotus 1-2-3, the spreadsheet system in the 1980s, and it replaced these adders of numbers. Characteristically, the dominating Microsoft Trust killed off Lotus 1-2-3 with what is today everybody's favorite spreadsheet, Microsoft Excel. Then along came TurboTax, and into it that kind of hurt the tax accountants. But accounting is more than crunching numbers and filling out forms. Just like the men with the little green visors were replaced by spreadsheets, robotic accounting is replacing some accounting jobs. One of the things that Forbes said about accounting is, well, quote, AI, artificial intelligence, is ready for prime time in accounting. First of all, what did they mean? And I guess, secondly, are they using the word artificial intelligence appropriately?
Absolutely. I believe Forbes is right on the mark when it comes to artificial intelligence and accounting. I'm seeing changes every single day in how we use accounting functions and how we use just the different algorithms and processes in accounting, how they're being taken over more by bots and procedures than by people punching in numbers. And I think that is a good thing.
So that's, you mentioned people punching in numbers. What are some of the other areas that you see impacted?
Yeah, I mean, technically, if you think about it, some areas such as accounts receivable and accounts payable, matching vendors with invoices, and then, you know, bank reconciliations. We can see this with Mint already and what it does with your expenses and how it...
Explain Mint. I use Mint, and it is a really great piece of software.
Yeah, so what it does is they basically have a backend that you allow into the bank, and it brings in your transactions, and based on history, on what you've coded in the past, it uses that information and even what other people have coded those transactions as, and helps you categorize the transaction so that you're not always having to determine what transaction is going where in your budget.
Now, when I use Mint as a personal user, it takes my credit cards, it takes my bank accounts, the checks I write, it takes a mortgage that I still own, it takes my retirement plan, and it puts it all in one place. And is this used at a higher level in business, or are they using about the same sort of idea?
Mint is looking at all the transactions that are coming in and how they're categorized, and that's helping with their information and their reporting.
I did notice that they don't get the categorization totally 100% correct at Mint, but they're pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I love Mint because this is Mint.com. They're not a sponsor. They're not giving us any money. But you go there and you set up Mint and you actually get all of your transactions printed out on a single spreadsheet from all the different sources. It's really a wonderful thing to have, especially if you have more than one credit card or more than one checking account. Mm-hmm. Everything is right there at your fingertips. Okay, so that's the data categorization such as Mint.
And banks are doing it as well. I know personally, I use Bank of America, and Bank of America categorizes transactions similarly to how Mint does.
Okay, so this idea of data categorization is one area that you see impacted. Any other areas in accounting?
Yeah, absolutely. Natural language recognition and understanding. One of the biggest issues that we have right now in accounting is taking a paper invoice, and then we have to have some sort of transaction and to take that paper invoice and put it into the system. And so there are accounting systems out there that are starting to look at automated data entry through natural language understanding. So essentially, you would scan in your invoice. It would look at where this invoice and the vendor that you've set up, where you had it done previously. It would suggest a GL code, and then you'd be on your merry way, rather than having to enter in each invoice with a person.
Now, I know a big part of accounting these days are governmental regulations and compliance. I would imagine that AI is helping there also.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially on the reporting side. Determining how you have everything set up, if you have it set up correctly, you know, you can use your system in order to
to easily comply with these different regulations, including tax, governmental, regulatory, so on and so forth.
Okay. You mentioned the bot. What is a bot?
Yeah. So we have a very specific definition for bot, just with the accounting system that we use at Opera Philadelphia. We use a system called ActivityHD by Incuitive, and it's a great for me, it's a great system. We also do payroll in-house. And what we've done is we've looked at the different processes that we do in accounting. And any process where it's the same thing, where the logic happens, where it happens continuously and is the same over and over again, where there is no decision-making, what we've done is we've started to develop some algorithms and develop automatic algorithms in the accounting system in order to handle these processes.
And these, I understand, are accounting tools that you can actually interface with the existing software. So you can specialize the software to do more what you want it to do by writing these little bots. Is that right?
Yeah, a great example is how we determine what employees to set up and send information out to Pennsylvania. So what we do is we look at when the last time the employee was paid, then we put a certain status on them, and then that bot is run continuously just to look at a very simple piece in the system, last check and compared to today's date, and then it gives the employee a status that tells us if we need to, if we're going to employ that person again, we have to re-register them with the state.
I see. So that's the example of compliance. Now I was reading in Forbes. Forbes said, we expect that by 2020, not only accounting tasks, but also tax, payroll, audits, and banking will be fully automated using AI techniques. This will disrupt the accounting industry in a way it never has for the last 500 years. I guess they're referring to the double entry system that was invented 500 years ago. This is bringing huge opportunities and serious challenges to the auditing industry. Jeremiah, what are they talking about? Who's lost their jobs and who's going to lose their jobs? And maybe what are some of these opportunities that they're talking about?
Yeah, so what I believe they're talking about is what's called, in my mind, the Robotic Accounting Department, or a RAD. And what that does is it takes a lot of the transactional processes that I mentioned earlier, and that's going to be taking over with computing and with accounting software. Where we're still going to need accountants is, you know, decision making is basically taking that information that you've put into the system, looking at it, amalgamating it in a report, and then making a decision. That those jobs will stay. The jobs that we have to look at are the ones that are entering the data into the accounting system and doing analysis that really, in the end, could be done by computers.
I see. Now, has anybody at Opera Philadelphia in the area of accounting lost their jobs because of AI?
Nobody's lost their jobs. But what we had a few months ago is we had one of our senior accountants leave, and I evaluated the work that was done by the senior accountant and decided that I would take the money from that person and invest it into the accounting system. And so that's what we did. And it worked actually quite well. We invested in turning processes that this person would be doing manually, and we turned that into bots. For any of the data entry tasks, we brought in a temporary employee that would then put in that information, and it worked extremely well. And that's where I think the future of accounting is going to be going.
Do you think this has happened in other places in the industry where they've replaced these senior accountant types with AI?
I do. I don't know any personally, but you know, it makes sense that this is what's going to happen over the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Well, related to that, is there any advice you would give anybody today who was thinking about pursuing an accountant-related education and ultimately a career in accounting?
Absolutely. The biggest thing is knowing how to make decisions with the information that you have in the system. Being an accountant is not just about data entry anymore. It's about understanding the data, understanding the database, and understanding where the information is going to flow in your reporting system. So that's where, if you're entering in the accounting industry, that's what you need to focus on today.
You touched on a little bit, but do you have anything else to say about the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the big things that we're going to see with artificial intelligence and accounting is I don't believe in the future every single business or every single organization needs its own accounting department. I think what we'll start seeing are these centralized accounting departments that serve multiple businesses and basically end up being a repository for information that they then send out to the business that they're serving, and that they're no longer going to need, you know, the accountants or the data bookkeepers or the data entry individuals that they don't need to be directly employed by the organization. So I believe that we're going to see more of these outsourced accounting departments.
And that's really going to impact the employment of...
Yeah, it's going to impact the employment, but it's also going to impact the bottom line for the organization. You know, I mean, if you can outsource it and it makes sense, then that's what you should do.
Then that's what it is. Excellent. Thank you, Jeremiah. Our guest has been Jeremiah Marks. He's the current CFO and Vice President of Opera Philadelphia. And thanks for spending your time with us, Jeremiah. And until next time on Mind Matters, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.